Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is July 30th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 175, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. Your title here. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew.
At macobserver.com.
We have the highest production standards ever.
We do. We do. Now, episode 175, isn't that like the Silicon anniversary or the... Ether layer anniversary or something?
I think so. I'm certain we're several steps above the duct tape anniversary.
I think we are. Yeah, and again, you know, my usual joke, I think we therefore must have been recording since about 1972. there's no other possible way we could have gotten to 175 of these things.
Well, clearly. And I apologize to all of our listeners that are having heart-related issues at this very moment because we're recording two episodes in the span of a week.
Well, yeah, to be fair, that's what we've done for the last 3 months.
Oh, so we're actually right on track. Go us.
Go us, yes. Yes. Every month every month ends with the promise of getting on a regular recording schedule and ends with a with hurried production. Oh, it's sad. We're showing too much of the sausage factory here.
Yeah, but we are predictable. So
we are predictable. Sad. You know, I'm actually excited about our three topics that we're going to talk about today.
Which is great because I can only imagine how horrible it would be for our listeners if we really didn't care about what we were talking about.
Well, you know, I mean, it's the beauty of the show. It's usually stuff we're interested in talking about or we wouldn't be recording in the first place. But at the same time, sometimes some shows are more exciting than others, or at least more interesting to me personally.
Yeah, well, you know, part of the plan is to keep you engaged and interested. So if we're accomplishing that, then I guess keeping the listeners interested is icing on the cake? No, great. That sounds wrong.
I have achieved being treated like an 8-year-old status. Go me.
Go you.
Now let's keep Brian interested and occupied so that he will have a good day and we won't have any troubles later.
Put the cork back on the end of his fork. We don't want another incident.
No, we don't. No, we don't. Well, listen, let's get to it.
All right. And really, put the cork back on your fork.
It's done.
Okay. Apple unveiled new iMac and Mac Pro models along with a 27-inch cinema display this week. The company needs someone to design a revolutionary new feature for Mac OS X, and Microsoft's new top job is making an iPad competitor.
Apple shot down the idea that it's abandoning the Mac in favor of the iPhone and iPad this week when it introduced its new iMac and Mac Pro models, along with a 27-inch LED backlit cinema display that's actually used with Macs and not with an iPad or iPhone. The new iMacs are available with a 27-inch, coincidentally, 16:9 aspect ratio, and for the first time, they are available with 8-core processors. Processors too. The new Mac Pro got a processor bump of up to 12 cores, which is just insane. And they include dual mini display connectors and can hold up to 32 gigs of RAM, or as Jeff originally had it, 16 terabytes.
I like to shoot for the stars.
Apple is also scrapping its 24-inch and 30-inch cinema displays in favor of its new 27-inch model. The 27-incher... Not going to make the joke, includes a built-in EyeSight camera and microphone, stereo speakers, built-in USB hub, and a MagSafe connector for charging Apple's laptops when they're plugged into the display. The new iMacs are priced starting at $1,199. The new Mac Pros start at $2,499, and the 27-incher costs $999.
And I just have to point out a little more sausage. I'm so glad that you caught my typo, because I originally had that listed as the 2-inch cinema display.
Yeah, at $9.99, that's kind of pricey.
It is, but those were really good 2-inches.
It'd probably be the best 2-inch display you've ever seen, that's for sure.
That's what I'm guessing.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I'm 12.
Oh, I went there.
Yeah.
Oh, you guided me. You actually had, you had one of those kettle prods, and you were like, you know, you were pushing me there.
I was. It's because I'm 12.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Apple is promising that macOS 10 at 10.7 will contain a new feature the company calls revolutionary in a job posting on the Apple website. Now, according to the posting, this unspecified feature, quote, has never been done before and will truly amaze everyone, unquote. And the company used the word revolutionary to describe the feature 3 times.
I'm guessing it's Mac Paint 2.
Oh, I hope so. Oh, it's going to rock. Maybe they'll add new patterns in.
Maybe.
Yeah. For the old timers, they're laughing. For the new timers, they're like, I have no clue. All right. The posting begins. Are you looking to help create something totally new? Something that has never been done before and will be truly amazing? Everyone. Well, they actually said a little more eloquently than that. Are you excited by the prospect that what you helped create would be used every day by millions of Apple customers? Then come and work with the macOS 10 software engineering team to help build a new and revolutionary feature for macOS 10. In other words, the many rumors regarding the obvious death of macOS 10 have apparently been a tad premature.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. It's funny how much that reads like a bad infomercial.
That's exactly what I was hearing in my head.
Yeah, exactly. Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, my favorite, told analysts and investors on Thursday that working with hardware partners to develop a tablet that is competitive with the iPad has, and I quote, job one urgency. The comments came at Microsoft's annual financial analyst meeting as he briefed analysts on hand for the event on his company's overall business. Quote, today one of the top issues on my mind, hey, there's a category, tablets, Mr. Ballmer said, according to live coverage notes of the event published by Business Insider. Apple has done an interesting job. They sold more than I'd like them to sell. We think about that. So it's our job to say, we have to get things and make them better. Just like we made things happen with netbooks, we have to do that with slates. Unquote. He obliquely made the case that there's an opportunity in the marketplace for there to be more specialized Windows tablets to address more specific needs than Apple's one-size-fits-all approach, saying, and I quote, we think about these devices, not one-size-fits-all. Been to too many meetings with journalists struggling to set up iPads for notes. We've got to push with our hardware partners as soon as they are ready. Unquote. The more important message he drove home, however, is that working with third-party hardware developers to gear up with products that can compete with iPad, quote, is job one urgency. We are working with these partners to deliver something people want to buy, unquote.
We really can't make this stuff up. Wow.
No, we can't. And that sound means that it's time for the context machine within the context machine. This is where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the stories and the news to provide some context for what's going on. And, you know, let's just, why don't we kind of just do it in reverse order? Let's talk about Mr. Ballmer.
I think that sounds great. And let me commend you once again on your absolutely fantastic Steve Ballmer impression.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think it came off better. I'll know when I listen back to it in post, but better than my Worf impression.
Hey, I liked your Worf impression.
It didn't sound right in my ear when I listened back to it. It sounded right when I said it. Didn't sound right when I listened to it.
Well, maybe you had to be... Well, I guess you kind of were there. Well, trust me. It sounded good.
All right. Well, be that as it may... you know, so this basically is a sort of event that Microsoft has been doing for a long time. and it's something that, that Apple does not do. Apple has an annual shareholder meeting because they have to. But this meeting is sort of, you know, it's an annual thing where basically Ballmer gets to make the case to mainly, it used to be analysts and, you know, the big hedge funds and whatnot, the big mutual fund companies, for why his company is doing okay. And you know, this time around, and it, I'll admit, I'm basing most of this upon the notes, the live coverage posted by Business Insider. I kind of got the impression that that Steve is a little bit on the defensive, that he felt like he really needed to make the case that he's doing a good job.
I think you're right. I have a feeling that there were a lot of people asking questions that related to the iPad, like, well, how could this have happened? You've had years of tablet experience, and then Apple just walked in and did this.
Yeah, and I one of the things that I noticed is that he was really sort of trying to emphasize the fact that because the PC business is growing again, and because they're going to they're going to sell more copies of Windows than ever, and that the Office business is doing well, and that therefore his tenure at the company is going well too.
Yeah, well, it's like you have said before, he falls back on the numbers to justify things.
Yeah, it seems kind of like, well, no, it's not that he falls back on the numbers to justify things. To me, it's almost like he feels the need to fall back on the numbers for self-affirmation.
Okay, well, that can play into justification also, but sure. I can totally see the self-affirmation thing because, by golly, he's all right.
Well, yeah, you know, everyone talks about what a great job Apple is doing, and, you know, there's people are not calling Microsoft beleaguered unless it's, you know, mostly tongue-in-cheek. You know, the company still does a lot of business. They still do more business than Apple, at least this quarter. I think they're going to fall behind next quarter, but whatever. But, you know, I think that the Microsoft people have been bombarded now for years with the impression that Apple is just well ahead of them, and I think that reacting to that sort of outside criticism to me was in Mr. Ballmer's presentation.
Okay, you dropped a word in there that to me is key to Microsoft's whole forward momentum right now, which is reaction. And I see Microsoft as a reactionary company for the most part, where Apple is a proactive company. And I have a feeling that there's a lot of shareholders and analysts that are wondering why Microsoft, with the amount of business that they do, the amount of revenue that they generate, is a reactionary company, and they're not out in front as the proactive innovator like Apple is.
Yeah. Well, and I think but you're just entirely right. That's always been the case. You know, you look at every single marketplace that I know of where Microsoft has entered, it's been a marketplace that they did not create. I mean, and certainly the same thing is often true with Apple, too.
You know, oh, true. Yeah. Many times Apple will come into a market well after it's established.
But even there, they're not reacting. What they're doing is they think they found a way to take a business category, and they found a way to do it better, and they found a way to basically be able to rewrite the rules. But Microsoft always has this feeling of, oh my God, someone else is doing something. We'd better do something too, and so let's just throw some crap at it. And that's a huge approach. You know, neither company is creating these markets,
but they have very different philosophies on how they enter into those markets.
Yeah, Apple is making the choice to enter a market when it feels like it should, and it always feels like Microsoft feels like it should be in every market and is always playing catch up to everybody else. That's, I don't know. It's one of the things that's always bugged me about them, I think.
You know, it's actually unfortunate because Microsoft really does have a lot of incredibly talented people mm-hmm. on staff. And I just have to wonder, what would they be able to create if they were given free rein, or you know, relatively speaking, free rein?
If they were given proper leadership.
Excellent choice of words. Proper leadership.
Because, you know, we've talked about this both on the show and off the show and in our staff meetings. And, you know, for years we've talked about this. Apple is a company that's led by a product guy. And Microsoft is a company that's currently led by a software guy. A salesman, marketing cheerleader guy. And, you know, even Bill Gates is I'm not going to call Bill Gates massively innovative by any stretch of the imagination, but he was at least a product guy.
That's true.
What was that thing we were watching when we were prepping for the show? And I commented that that Steve Ballmer, this was from a couple of years ago, it's an interview that he did a couple of years ago, and the whole interview he's talking about how, you know, we're not first in the market, but, you know, we have tenacity, and we're going to keep trying. And he's sort of talking about the work in being in a market, and you contrast that to what Apple's executives talk about, and they always talk about making great products.
Yeah, and yeah, that's a huge philosophical difference in the way the companies are presenting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that says a lot about how they also see their place in the market. You know, for Apple, they're thinking, okay, we're going to make some really cool stuff. And Microsoft is thinking, okay, we have to figure out how to take this market.
Yeah, we have to make some stuff so we can sell it.
Right.
Right. You know, someone else is making stuff and selling it, so we have to make some stuff and sell it too. And I don't think it's an issue of their talent. I mean, you look at how many ex-Apple people were seduced over to Microsoft in the 90s. And, you know, to my knowledge, they all left because it just seemed kind of pointless to them to be there. And again, I'll also say that I think that the only great products that come out of Microsoft are from the Mac business unit. Well, I don't know. Xbox has finally turned into something.
I was going to ask what you think about the Xbox.
Xbox is, because Sony has dropped the ball so hard on the PlayStation, I think that Microsoft has actually done some cool stuff with Kinect and the whole Xbox Live thing. I'm sorry, not Kinect. I did not mean Kinect. I meant their Xbox Live ecosystem, and they've turned that into a good product. I think that a company like Apple could do it 1,000 times better, and I think that a company like Sony should have done it 10 times better.
Yeah, and well, you know, maybe someday Apple will get into the game market.
Yeah.
You know,
they are in the iPad and the iPhone.
That's true. Okay, so maybe that's where Apple sees the place to innovate in the game market. It's not so much in the console area; it's in the portable gaming. Because their console gaming, Pippin, that never really happened. So,
mm-mm.
Yeah,
mm-mm. Yeah, and that was Pippin was an ill-fated effort to begin with.
Yeah, which it would have been cool for it to come out just simply so that I could find one in a garage sale and buy it. I would hook it up though and play it. There'd probably be like 5 games of Pong and Battle Tank, and that's it.
Probably. So, I mean, the long and the short of it is that I think Microsoft bizarrely finds itself in a reactionary catch-up position in a market that it began, the tablet market. And that, you know, another thing about that actually that we should have mentioned is that this whole we have to turn to our partners to make this stuff happen, right? We have to work with our third-party hardware developers to get them to make something that will compete with the iPad. Well, that's why they'll never do it. I so believe in the whole proprietary whole widget concept.
Okay, yeah, I have to agree. And it sounds like something we say over and over again, which is Apple makes the whole widget. They have total control over the product. They can do it right, and they can make exactly what they want. On the PC side, on the Microsoft side, you end up with products built by committee.
On the Google side.
On the Google side as well, absolutely. And when you start designing by committee, there are sacrifices and compromises that you don't have to make when you are creating the whole product.
Right. And that those two approaches, I think that there's room in the marketplace for both. I think that it is undeniable that the Microsoft business model has, you know, provided for cheap in more ways than one computers. There's a lot of value to humanity in having cheap computers, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. For me, I prefer the end result of the way Apple does business, the way Apple designs for the user experience and controls the whole hardware and software, and can make a product for me that works, that just works.
And I know this is going to make me sound like a broken record, but this is exactly why I'm excited to see what HP does with their tablet products now that they own the assets of Palm.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I am hopeful. I am really hopeful that HP can make a really compelling webOS device. Really, really. I really hope they can light a fire under Apple and make Apple have to work even harder to stay out in front.
That would be fantastic for everyone. I can only imagine how great the products from Apple and also from HP would be if we get this really great product competition going between the two companies.
Yeah, I mean, they won't actually do this, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, well, I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I will too. I bet you that HP ends up making some compelling products for business, enterprise, and the retail space.
Okay, I can totally see that.
I think they're going to end up doing particularly well there. But, you know, they've got a lot of consumer people from Palm at HP. And if they can keep those people, maybe, you know, I don't know. I want to say that Palm's staff with HP's resources could yield a great product. It could yield a great product.
Yeah, absolutely. And now it's up to them to live up to our standards.
Indeed.
No pressure.
No pressure. No. No. Well, so let's talk about let's do this. Let's talk about the new products from Apple next.
Oh, now see, you're mixing it up, but I'm okay with that. You know,
yeah, because you know that way we can close on the macOS 10 revolutionary stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah, that totally works. So, all right, so we have new iMacs that are available now, mm-hmm. and the 27-inch model now has a 16:9 aspect ratio,
mm-hmm. and eight cores,
and
for a consumer device or a prosumer device.
Yeah, and let's see, dual hard drive option now potentially. Because there's a space for an extra drive inside, but right. I guess you have to do that as build to order because taking these things apart is kind of a pain.
Yeah, well, you could probably take it to an Apple store and have them do it later. But you know, I think you'd want to go ahead and do it from the start.
Right. So, but the thing is, if you want a prosumer level machine at mm-hmm. a good price. I mean, holy crap.
Eight cores with the 27-inch display, that's just crazy. There are a few things that you can't do with that machine.
Yeah.
Very few things.
That's a machine that, for a lot of people, can replace a Mac Pro.
Oh, yeah.
and take up a lot less space. Since it has FireWire 800 and USB 2, you can daisy chain off all the drives that you want to.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it,
I mean, there are certainly some things that a Mac Pro will still be better for the hardcore high end.
Oh, sure. Yeah, if you want to do stuff with higher-end video cards than you can get in an iMac, okay, it's a Mac Pro. If you want to run multiple displays, yes, you can plug a second display into the new iMacs like you could with the previous models.
But there are legitimate cases for having three or four displays.
Oh, yeah. If you're in the video industry, then three, four, six displays... Yep. Not uncommon.
Yeah, or, you know, developer, well, I don't know, but developers could probably get by with two more often than not. But the day traders, of course, most day traders are going to be using a Windows device to begin with. A lot of graphics pros, a lot of scientists can use multiple processors. Of course, IT guys can certainly use multiple multiple displays is what I meant.
I knew what you meant, yeah.
Yeah. So, but... For a lot of people who may previously have considered a Mac Pro, a 27-inch iMac with 8 cores is going to be their machine.
Well, every time Apple revs the iMac line,
mm-hmm.
I say to myself, well, and other people, wow, they've made a machine that is a great option for people that need a lot of horsepower but can't afford a Mac Pro. So this is a machine that's probably going to sway people that are on the fence maybe over to the iMac side from the Mac Pro.
Yep.
And every time a new model comes out, I end up saying the same thing again.
Yep. And you know, Apple still keeps making the Mac Pro, fortunately. I mean, I love mine. I've got an 8-core Mac Pro, and I just, you know, I love it. And I could probably get by with the 27-inch iMac and be more than happy. But I will still probably get a Mac Pro when I replace this one.
And I totally get why you would do that. I mean, the option to be able to have multiple displays, to have multiple internal hard drives, having the extra FireWire ports, all things that I look at as valuable for someone that might be creating their own music.
Yeah. If I ever go away from Logic and go to Pro Tools, I'd have to have the internal slots. But be that as it may, a lot of people are going to dig this iMac. Now that said, 12 cores in a Mac Pro is so freaking cool. It's not even funny.
Oh, it's insane! It's awesome. I want to see people write applications that max out 12 cores.
Yeah, I still find it very difficult to tax my 2.5-year-old, almost 3-year-old Mac, 8 cores with my Mac Pro.
Now, if you're doing a lot of video render work, then it would probably be easier to max out those cores.
I'm sure it would be, but Logic, the most recent version of Logic, doesn't do it when it's bouncing stuff down. I think actually one of the things that uses the most processor is the CIDR game porting technology, because it is, I don't actually know how to properly describe it, but it's you know, somewhere between a cross between an actual port and an emulation layer.
We'll call it a hybrid.
Yeah, feel free to correct me, by the way, if you know more about what CIDR does, but that'll definitely use up every bit of processor it can find. But I don't know, 12 cores is pretty darn cool.
It is. And I like that there's the dual mini display port connectors,
mm-hmm.
which means that if you're going to buy multiple 27-inch displays from Apple, uh-huh. you don't need adapters for your second display.
Right.
And it also has the dual link DVI connector on it. So you can still go with the big 30-inch displays too.
Right. Right, and speaking of 30-inch displays, I think it'd be worth our time to take a moment out and compare Apple's new 27-inch Cinema Display to what the competition is doing.
Okay, I think that sounds like an excellent idea. So competition would be for the average person. It would be displaced from what Dell.
Well, for the average person, or for the.
Well, for the average person,
prosumer.
Okay, yeah, prosumer. Pro. That's yeah,
prosumer and above.
Right. Okay. So there's a lot of prosumers that will look at the 27-inch LED backlit cinema display, mm-hmm. and then there will be products from Dell and HP, and anyone else we want to throw in there?
No, let's stick with Dell and HP.
Okay.
Let's start with Dell.
Okay.
So Dell is offering a 27-inch display for $999 after $100 instant savings.
Okay.
But it's not LED backlit.
Right. And does it have any extra features?
Well, I don't know. It's a good display.
Okay.
It's a fine display. Now, they have... it's funny. Like, one of the things I found interesting about this is that Apple's 30-inch display was more expensive than everybody else's, including Dell's, which basically used the same mechanism.
Yeah, well, not just basically. It was the same display panel.
Yeah, the same display panel.
Yeah.
And Dell was charging $15.99, and Apple was charging $17.99. In the meanwhile, HP had a 30-inch for $12.99.
Right, right.
Leaving just Apple for like a year and a half, those were roughly the prices involved. And Apple was just, you know, way at the high end. And now we come in, and Apple actually, from what we can find, is on the most competitive price-wise.
Right.
For the features you get.
Right. Yeah, everything that we found that would fall in the same general competitive market range isn't even LED backlit.
Right, so HP they've got a 24-inch for $599 that's not LED backlit. Apple's 24-inch is now $799, which is actually still a little bit high, even though it is LED backlit. You're paying a pretty good premium for the LED backlighting.
Right, but it does have the MagSafe connector built into it, so
yep.
You know, well, that's not worth that much money, but still.
But at the same time, Apple was not at the way at the high end, because HP was doing their 24. It's a 1900x1200 resolution 24-inch LED Super Pro Dream Color display for $24.99.
Right, and yeah, and that's like in a class by itself.
Yeah, and who's that aimed at?
That's aimed at people that are doing pro video and pro photography, pro graphic design, stuff where color matching is so critical. That's actually the display that HP designed in conjunction with DreamWorks Animation.
Right.
And if you want to look at a market where extremely accurate color is critical, well... Mm-hmm. The computer animation industry is a right. perfect example.
And the effects processing and digital editing
right
market. It, you know, it's funny. Apple used to lead the way with ColorSync.
Yeah, ColorSync feels like it has been practically abandoned by Apple.
Oh, yeah. I think it's totally been abandoned by Apple.
I don't think they've even had a product leader for several years for ColorSync.
No, they haven't. Not that I know of, and you would know better than I would, because that's more your bailiwick. But in comparison, again, at the 27-inch LED level, Apple is offering roughly the same price, but with LED, no one else has it.
That's true, and the Apple display has a built-in EyeSight camera, has built-in stereo speakers,
right.
and a built-in microphone.
Right.
So yeah, that's a nice little bonus to go along with that.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird place. I mean, Apple has just never really or seldom been a price leader when it comes to its displays, and now suddenly they are. You know, if they can sell a 27-inch for whatever with LED backlighting for the same price that everybody else is selling it without, well, that's pretty huge. And you know, why don't you take a moment out and make the case for why our listeners should give a crap about LED backlighting to begin with.
Okay, so I'll just toss out a few things. First, you get more uniform lighting across your display. So, you know how a lot of displays, you can get that kind of darkish, a little bit darker at the edges. You don't have that with LED. Since it's LED instead of the fluorescent tubes, you don't have to worry about potential flicker-related issues, which most people aren't going to have anyhow, but it can still be a potential issue, say, if you're in an environment where you have fluorescent lighting anyhow.
Right.
And the whites that you can create with the LED mechanism can potentially be truer, brighter whites than you get with the older style. You can do thinner displays, and you have better power consumption, so they're greener.
Much better power consumption.
Is that good for now, or do you want me to toss some more things in?
Yeah, so in other words, there are plenty of reasons to care.
Yeah, and yeah, the whole idea of having LED backlit, to me, is very exciting.
Yeah, it is for me too. And I was waiting for Apple to do a 30-inch with LED backlighting, and it became clear, I think probably the fourth year that the 30-inch was on the market unchanged, that they weren't going to do it. So I'm glad that they finally got around to introducing the 27-inch.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that they abandoned the 30-inch LED backlit idea because getting the components that they need just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, that's the only reason that makes sense. And it also makes sense for them to have, from a cost standpoint, it makes a lot of sense for Apple to have its high-end displays united. In other words, the 27-inch iMac and the 27-inch Cinema display could share a lot in common.
Right, which then hopefully translates to better component pricing for Apple.
Right. Well, by the way, the prices that we were using for Dell are for their ultra-sharp monitors, which are aimed at graphics pros, which is where I think that Apple is competing with its 27-inch.
Right. And now, and some people will say, well, geez, Apple's 27-inch display is glossy, so therefore it can't be focused on graphics pros. And
that's a good point.
Now, and for me, that's very true. For a lot of other people, I mean, I know professional photographers that prefer Apple's glossy displays on their laptops. So there's definitely a market out there for pro users with that glossy display.
There's been a shift as we deal more and more with online stuff, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
The color matching to print matters less and less.
Yeah, color matching to print, if you're dealing primarily with online, you're right. It doesn't matter. And you don't have control over what your colors look like on someone else's display because you don't know what type of lighting they have, if they've done any color correction.
Mm-hmm. I think that we're seeing a mind shift away from color matching being as important, which is probably why Apple stopped bothering with ColorSync.
Well, I can see where people would be concerned with color matching if they're really into accurate reproductions of the movies they like to watch. Because if the people that... Okay, like let's use Alien as an example, because the lighting is very dark and you have lots of grays and whites and you know, like that kind of steel blue color throughout the movie. And if your colors are skewed really weird, those colors are going to look wrong. And you don't want to have an alien that's kind of purpley when he should be silvery blacky.
Balderdash! I think the number of movie buffs who are going to care at that level are few and far between.
And they're probably not going to be watching those movies on their LED cinema display.
No, they're going to be watching it on a home theater system.
Right, and they will have color calibrated their home theater system. And
yes, exactly.
Yeah. All right, so I offered up a great argument that's not valid. Go me.
Yeah. Nonetheless, excited about Apple's 27-inch. I hope to be able to get one at some point.
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited about it, too, even though it's not the right display for me. I think it's a really cool display at a really good price.
Yep. Yep and yep. All right. So, this week's episode is brought to you by the folks at Citrix.
Oh, it is. Excellent. I say that like it was a surprise, so it sounds more exciting for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with Citrix and their go-to Assist Express product, it's actually a really cool product that lets you remotely access someone else's computer so that you can perform maintenance, show them how to do things, and it's done in a secure fashion. Each time you connect, they have to explicitly approve the access. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about people sneaking into your computer remotely when you don't want them to.
Or they don't have to.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's an easy to use product, and it's a great option for consultants that need to do stuff across town or across the country. It's a great option for helping out your family without having to see them face to face.
And sometimes that's a benefit, isn't it, Jeff?
Oh, yes, it is.
And it can even be used by IT people who have to do support across large networks of people. It's a great product. These guys have been doing this stuff for a long time. This is the GoToMeeting people, right?
Yes.
They've been doing this. They've been specializing in it for a long time. And we are pleased that they are sponsoring us. And they are offering 30 days free if you go to GoToAssist.com.
/machine.
And you can sign up. And if you do that, you, of course, let them know that we sent you.
And you get 30 days to play with the product for free.
Yeah, 30 days for free. And, you know, for a lot of people, that would be just enough to... That's all they need. They need to help their family once. My guess is you'll end up needing it again, though.
Yeah, well, once your family knows that you can actually help them remotely...
Because then I don't have to see you.
See, so not only has Citrix created a product that allows people to remotely access and help computers, they're helping keep families from fighting.
Yes, yes, exactly. Everybody wins. Everybody wins. Yeah, you know, it's funny. There's definitely a corollary to the you don't have to see them.
Yeah.
To see them side. Well, oh, I can't stand that Jeff guy, but I'll let him fix my computer as long as he doesn't have to come in the house.
It's like you know my family.
Exactly. Who are you gonna call Brian? Oh, he can do it. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. That's fine. Go ahead. yeah, so go to assist.com/machine for the Apple Context Machine and check it out. It's cool stuff.
Yes, it is.
That's cool stuff. All right, so now the last thing that we're going to talk about in today's episode, or installment, or whatever it is you call a podcast, is Apple's, you know...
Revolutionary.
Infomercial for macOS 10.7.
It's revolutionary.
Like, the people that wrote this not just for the job applicant, but because they knew it would be picked up.
That's very possible. And it wouldn't surprise me if Apple actually did something like write a job description with the intent of getting the Mac and Apple news-related sites to pick it up and run with it.
Maybe. I'd actually be more inclined to think that whoever was in charge of writing this up decided that that would be clever versus it being some sort of top-down directive.
Well, my guess is that macOS 10.7 will have ShamWow built in.
Is it made by Germans? You know they always make good stuff.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, so clearly, Apple is excited about 10.7. And so one of the things we didn't talk about when we introduced it was that the ad specified that the quote-unquote exceptional candidate will have a lot of experience with HTTP protocols.
Right.
And will also have experience developing web-based platforms.
See ShamWow.
So It seems fairly clear. Of course, you never know. That could be total obfuscation on the part of Apple. That would be a pretty crappy thing
to do in their job description.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they may have pitched it so that we all just assume it's going to be whatever. It's going to be a web-based thing. It's going to be some kind of cloud-based thing.
That seems like a reasonable assumption.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it, their move towards the cloud with Mobile Me services, their expected move towards the cloud with iTunes, this data center that they're building in North Carolina.
In the clouds of North Carolina.
And all of these things suggest, of course, that they see a lot of stuff in the future with the cloud, which, of course, makes sense. And that this new feature, they figured out something to do with the cloud. You know, it could just be, they say millions of people will do it every day. You know, I'm wondering if, we've talked before, Jeff, about the whole notion of taking your desktop with you anywhere.
Yes, we have.
Maybe it's going to be that finally.
That's a possibility. That would definitely be, if they do it correctly, that would be revolutionary, and it would definitely be something that.
Yeah, but would millions of people use it every day?
Well, if your desktop is something that goes with you everywhere, and Apple's standard way of letting people work with this involves at least part of your desktop is always on the cloud, even if you have a desktop Mac that never leaves your office,
you're still using it.
You're still using it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I think it'll be something else. I was excited a little bit because I've been wanting that now since I read that interview from Steve back in like 1997 or something.
Well, my guess is that this definitely has a cloud spin to it, and that it's going to be something that ties data together more effectively between your Mac and your iPad.
Right. And I think this really should put to rest the notion that Apple is ready to ditch the damned Mac platform.
You know, I think that's a big thing with this job announcement. I mean, the whole idea that Apple is going to kill off the Mac because now they have the iPad and the iPhone. Okay, well, I've always assumed that people that seriously believed that may have been suffering from trauma related to a stroke or something like that.
Like that analyst, and I forget his name, and I really wish I could burn him by name because he's that much of a numbnut, who said that he expected... So Microsoft recently renewed its license with ARM.
Mm-hmm.
To the same kind of license that Apple has that allows them to basically do their own ARM architecture, right?
Right.
And this analyst said that he expects that to be something related to the Xbox, which is just the most retarded thing on the planet. I mean, it's just, you know, let's go from a 2.5 gigahertz cell processor to a gigahertz ARM processor that's designed for low power consumption. It's just, anyway, that kind of analysis to me is the only kind of analysis that suggests that Apple would willingly kill off 40-45% of its business.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And keep in mind, if you want to write applications for Apple's iOS platform, you need a Mac.
Well, then they could just start licensing Windows. They could move all their development tools to Windows.
Why do you hurt me like that?
Yeah. Anyway, so whatever reason people have had for, and I kind of understand where it came from. You know, Apple has been all about the iPhone. iPhone, that's funny. Has been all about the iPhone and iOS, for sure. The iPad is clearly a big deal. Steve has said that for many users, the iPad is the future. Right.
And I think that's a fair statement because there are a lot of people out there that use an iMac or a desktop Mac not because it's the right machine for them, but because it's the only machine for them.
Yeah, it's been what we do. And, of course, there was no mention of the Mac platform at WWDC. So I understand where the sort of angst/gleeful prognostications were coming from.
So, okay, I want to step back.
But they still don't make any sense.
All right, just to step back a little bit.
Okay.
Apple did not have any mention of the Mac or Mac OS X during their public keynote. But there was still Mac OS X and Mac-related stuff that we didn't get to see.
Yeah, there were still courses and sessions.
Right, but yes, it was but dominantly it was iOS-related.
It was an iOS event.
And I'm betting that WWDC next year
is going to be a Mac OS X dominated event.
Right, because that seems like about the right time for Apple to really be pushing out a lot of information to developers for 10.7.
Yeah, two-year development cycles make a lot more sense to me anyway.
Yeah, and we had our big revolutionary change with the iPhone operating system this year with iOS 4.
Right. Of course, the other example, the other route could be doing a Mac WWDC and an iPhone WWDC. That's certainly possible.
I don't think Apple will do that.
I don't think they will, simply because you're now taking a month out of those executives' years.
Right? That's true.
And, 2 weeks per event minimum for their their entire engineering team and a bunch of other people that are involved with this thing. Apple is a small company. They might be doing a lot of business, but they are lean. They are very, very, very lean. So I don't really see them going to two events per year either. But I can see them doing alternating, going, Mac 1 year, iPhone the next year, and never actually saying that it's any kind of a policy.
Right, because they can do whatever they want.
Because they can do, and they will do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Right. So clearly Mac 10.7 is going to be a big deal to the company. They're expecting it to sell more Macs for them.
And it's going to have a feature that's revolutionary.
Yes, revolutionary.
Yeah.
So, it's exciting. I can't wait till we actually learn something for real about it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be cool, and I can't wait to see what features Apple start showing, when they start teasing us with 10.7.
Right.
And then to watch people start going, oh, well, do you think this is the feature that the job posting was for? Oh, no, I think it's this feature. And it's probably going to be something that spans across multiple features of the operating system.
Yeah, it won't also hit a developer seed until it's unveiled publicly. They're not going to want whatever this is to be leaked.
I think that totally makes sense.
Yeah. All righty. That seems like a great place for us to wrap it up.
I think it does too. Yeah.
Oh, man. I really... You know what I hate? You know what I hate about my mind sometimes, Jeff?
The chocolate fantasies.
No.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, nor the big-headed gnomes that sometimes occupy my dreams. In this particular case, it's my associative thing where I, lyrics from a song stick with me, and when I hear those lyrics, I think about the song. In this case, I went wrap it up and immediately started going, I'll take it, wrap it up, I'll take it. Pardon my language. I hate that song.
Right.
I hate that song.
So while this is a trait that totally annoys you about yourself, it's one that I find to be incredibly fracking awesome about you.
So I hear the word freedom and I immediately go freedom. I hear wrap it up and I immediately go to the Fabulous Thunderbirds. And I hear something else that's been, this is not song related, but anytime anyone says previously, in my head I hear, I'm Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Following the word previously. It's like, I just can't block this stuff out. Anyway, wrap it up. I'll take it.
Well, had I known that previously, I would have been tossing words like that out at you more often.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay. So if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And as I've previously said, succinctness is next to steveliness. And That's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And you can feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/JakeAmmett.
And I am, or at least rumor has it, at twitter.com/TMOBrian, and that is Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. Smile on My Mac and Citrix have both been our sponsors this month, and this week's show is sponsored by Citrix. That's all for this week.
Yeah, and as we've previously said... Thank you to Melissa for your awesome sound effects work, and stay subscribed.
Yeah, I'm going to take away your freedom to say what you want. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Down.